Ahoy! Welcome aboard the tall ship Kaiama, Toronto's iconic tall ship known for its large pirate-like sails, its old-world charm, and of course, its beautiful docking location in the center of Toronto's waterfront. Truly a moment captured in time. We thank you for embarking on this journey with us and being a part of Kaiama's remarkable history, which you are about to discover. Nowadays, approximately 100,000 people step foot onto this impressive schooner during the summer months to take in the sights and sounds of Toronto's gorgeous waterfront and majestic Lake Ontario. During this audio guide, we will explore the unique history of how and why this vessel came to be. Born in Germany, traveling throughout Europe, all the way to the Caribbean, Kaiama already had quite the life before settling down in our waters here in Toronto. If these seawalls could talk. We also want to touch on some of the history of Toronto's impressive waterfront, the Toronto Islands we know and love, and even the fortunate, yet accidental, creation of the harbor's Eastern Gap. Did you know that the Toronto Island used to actually be attached to the mainland? So many fun facts to learn. So all aboard. This journey of the tall ship Kaiama is setting sail now. The tall ship Kaiama is a majestic three-masted schooner that currently calls the Toronto waterfront its home. Would you believe it if I told you that the waterfront we know today was actually designed to host Kaiama? The vessel was extremely important at the time, and they wanted to make sure it could dock right in between the East and West Pier. So the big question is, how did this remarkable ship get here in the first place? Ich verdiene, when translated from German, means I make money, also called Nobis Kluge, was the first ever German-developed and mass-produced coastal freighter series of ships. This series was created during the economic crisis of the 1920s as an attempt by the shipyards to receive more orders. They offered up this type of vessel with firm pricing and a fixed delivery date, which was almost unheard of at the time. Talk about customer service. The name, Ich verdiene, again meaning, I make money, was initially a PR move. The ship's creators wanted to advertise to potential customers that they were a solid and economical investment, and of course, a great way to make money. And this wasn't far from the truth. At the time, they were an extremely economic choice. They were cheap to run, could be manned by a small crew, and could easily be operated by their owner. Not surprisingly, it wasn't long before they became very popular in the Netherlands, Belgium, Germany, and Scandinavia. But then, like with anything, problems began to surface. Owners were finding it extremely difficult to attract crews to actually work on the boats, as these types of boats did not have the same sort of cachet as the deep-sea vessels, which were often able to take crews far from their homes and on exciting adventures. By the late 1950s, and in order to help put these boats to good use, German authorities decided to make a rule. Any seaman, before he could take his AB test, also known as the able-bodied seaman test that happened at the end of a three-year apprenticeship, needed to spend at least 6 months on one of these smaller vessels like Kaiama. This solved the problem with the crew and also provided properly trained sailors to these ships. It was a win-win situation. 12 of these specific types of boats were eventually built, and only 3 have survived until today. One is called the Anne-Marie, which is becoming a museum ship. Second is the Dutch-owned Haarstocht, now operating out of Antwerp as a hotel and party ship. And of course, you guessed it, Toronto's own Kaiama. Kaiama is at the moment the best preserved example of this type of vessel, as close to the original as you are ever going to find. Oh, our Kaiama. It wasn't before long that it attracted the attention of Captain Willem Wilkins, who soon commissioned it, giving it the build number 395. So there she was, in all her glory on July 26, 1930, under the original name of Wilfred, to be officially turned over to Captain Wilkins. Captain Wilkins was her proud owner and master, operating her from the home port of Hamburg from 1930 until 1960. She was then purchased by Captain Andreas Kohler Asmussen of Denmark. Try saying that 10 times fast. Upon its purchase, Asmussen lovingly renamed the ship Kayama after his two sons, Kawe and Jan, and his wife, Maria. The ship continued to work under sail until the mid-1970s, at which time they decided to convert Kayama to a strictly motor-driven cargo vessel. Then things got crazy. In the spring of 1998, Captain Asmussen suffered a fatal cardiac arrest while at the wheel of his beloved vessel. As he was the only crew on watch at the time, the ship ran aground upon a beach near Malmö, Sweden. A later inspection determined that very little damage had been suffered, which again speaks to the extremely high-quality construction of this amazing and historic group of ships. So basically, from 1930 until 1998, Kayama worked by trading all kinds of general cargo throughout the Baltic Sea, the North Sea, the Norwegian Sea up to Murmansk, and on her southern voyages went as far south as Bilbao in the northwest of Spain. Let's just say she's well-traveled. Then, lucky for us, in January of 1999, Kayama was purchased by Great Lakes Schooner Company in Toronto. As with any big move, she prepped for sea, said goodbye to friends, and steamed to England, and then, via the Azores, headed onto her final home in Toronto. Once here, Kayama underwent a major restoration process to ensure its original charm was maintained and that it was safe and sturdy for the slews of people that were about to board it. Within 10 months, Kayama was operating out of the Toronto waterfront on Lake Ontario, offering public day sails, educational programs, and corporate charters. Of course, one of the biggest attractions of Toronto's waterfront is our not-so-secret hideaway, the Toronto Islands. If you haven't spent a sun-filled summer day on the islands, you need to change that right away. You won't be sorry. From large-scale concerts to a clothing-optional beach and a magical hedge maze, there is literally something for everyone. But let's go back in time a bit, to the Toronto Islands in the 1800s, to one of the very first structures that was ever built on the islands, the Gibraltar Point Lighthouse, built in 1808. Now, although this beautiful structure has great significance to our city, legend says that the infamous lighthouse is rumored to be a part of an unsolved murder mystery. Although the full plot and details of these dark events have never fully been pieced together, it was said to be a confrontation between drunken soldiers looking for bootlegged booze at the lighthouse. The two soldiers were charged for the crime, although a motive was never found and neither of the men were ever actually convicted. The bizarre twist is that the body of the victim, the German lighthouse keeper, has still never been found. Now, don't worry, there are also beautiful and romantic Toronto Island stories, describing the ways in which people would enjoy the island in all of its natural beauty. Did you know that back in the day, Torontonians used to actually be able to walk all the way to the islands? No ferry required. The islands we know today were still attached to the mainland, allowing easy access to these pristine lands. The area people could walk along was a 9-kilometer sandspit that was located near the bottom of Woodbine Avenue. A unique piece of history that displays the everyday use of this path to the islands was found in a personal diary from a woman named Elizabeth Simcoe. Elizabeth Simcoe was the wife of John Graves Simcoe, who is best known for founding the town of York, which we now, of course, call Toronto. Fascinatingly, in Elizabeth's personal diary, she ends up providing us with one of the earliest records of this area that allowed people to walk over to the islands. The diary describes a romantic day spent with her husband, and very clearly references the use of the sandspit to get to the area we now know as Center Island. Her diary read,
"We rowed along the peninsula, so I called the spit of sand, for it is united to the mainland by a very narrow neck of ground. We crossed the bay opposite the camp and rowed by the lakeside to the end of the peninsula."
It sounds like it was a lovely date she and her husband had that day. She spoke very highly of the island, mentioning gorgeous meadows, ponds, white flowers, and wild vines. She also mentions finding purple-colored peas that she was told she could eat if they were boiled. Please, do not try this at home. Then, everything changed. The romantic pathway to the islands that the Simcoes so fondly remember was erased from our history on the fateful eve of April 13th, 1858. On this stormy night, the weather got so bad and the water so rough that the waves quite literally severed the connection between the islands and the mainland, allowing water to gush into the Toronto Harbor, completely eliminating the sandspit. Now keep in mind, the protection of that sandspit was extremely important to Toronto at the time. With threats of attack coming into the city, it was comforting to know that there was only one entrance into the harbor, which was heavily guarded by Fort York. Once the sandspit was gone, the Canadian forces now had two easily accessible entrances to guard. This newly opened area was later named the Eastern Gap, which you may get to ride through on your cruise. Let's fast forward in time a bit. In World War II, when Nazi Germany defeated Norway in April of 1940, the Norwegian forces, the king, and key members of the government had to leave Norway. They decided to head to England, where the Norwegian government in exile began the process of setting up a whole new base of operations. But where were they to go? A decision was swiftly made to keep the existing Norwegian pilots as an independent unit and to head to North America to figure out their new base location. This is where, in true Canadian fashion, the Toronto Islands swooped in to the rescue. The base area around the Toronto Island Airport became an area where young Norwegians migrated to and soon set up as a training camp and school for airmen and soldiers in Canada. They even negotiated directly with the Canadian government officials to obtain an agreement to use available airport facilities at the Toronto Island Airport. They named it Little Norway. Due to a collision between a plane and one of the Toronto Island ferries, a decision was made to move the camp up to Muskoka, which is just north of Toronto. The camp remained there for 3 more years until it was moved back to England. In 1833, Michael O'Connor opened the island's first ever hotel, catering to the growing number of Torontonians seeking an escape from the big city life. For these people, the island was a place where they could relax, attend sporting events, dance, and socialize. Even in the cold Canadian winters, people still came to the island to fish, skate, and sail their ice boats. By the late 1870s, Hanlon's Point became known as the Coney Island of Canada, with a cabaret theater, dance halls, and a large amusement park. In 1897, a baseball and lacrosse stadium were built on the site of the present-day Island Airport. It was here where, drumroll please, Babe Ruth hit his first major league home run. Talk about historic. Around this time, numerous cottages were built as Toronto city residents began to fully embrace the landscape and lifestyle of the island. By the turn of the century, Hanlon's Point had grown to be a summer suburb of the city. And this it remained for more than 50 years. Nowadays, the islands make up many of Toronto's most exciting attractions for tourists and locals. The most popular with families being Centerville Amusement Park, where you can enjoy a corn dog and some cotton candy while dizzying yourself on one of the rides. When was the last time you went on a tilt-a-whirl? Then of course there are the beaches such as Center Island Beach and Hanlon's Point Beach, where clothing optional tanning is permitted. Ooh la la. And of course, the Billy Bishop Airport. The islands are home to many residents, some who have called the island their home for many decades. Think that may be fun? Having the opportunity to call the island your home can be yours, if you are willing to wait idle on a list for up to 2 or 3 decades before your name is drawn. Once selected, though, you can have the luxury of living in an oasis of nature, which some would say is similar to living on an island in the Muskokas, far away from the bustling city, accompanied with gardens, art centers and shops, even a small school. The only caveat is that you may have to adjust to the sounds of planes overhead. But I think I'd be fine with that to live the island life. Now here's a little bit of the dirty truth. The shore of Lake Ontario and present-day Toronto waterfront is mostly landfill, extending a whole kilometer further than where the natural shoreline actually was. The original shoreline was all the way up to where the Royal York Hotel sits now. In the 1990s, Ashbridges Bay was filled in, and that is how the Portlands area, Cherry Street to Leslie Street, was created. Even the modern harbor area was mostly formed through landfill in the years around the First World War, to allow access to larger vessels. The central waterfront functioned as an important industrial area for many years, providing shipping access to communities from Port Union to Mimico in the west. Eventually, Toronto expanded along the waterfront with new residential suburbs. Then, of course, in the 1950s, the Gardiner Expressway project began to help connect the suburbs to the west, and in turn substantially changed the western waterfront. As the Toronto area prospered and the downtown area lands became more developed, industry began to move out of the central area seeking cheaper land in the suburbs. This is where the railway came in. The area just north of the waterfront had become too valuable to keep industrial and started being converted to other uses, starting with the CN Tower in the 1970s. The railway lands became the site of the Sky Dome, now known as the Rogers Centre, home to our Toronto Blue Jays. Go, Jays, go! As well as the Toronto Convention Centre, office buildings, and of course, numerous condo buildings. The 1972 Canadian election saw a further step when the federal Liberals promised to improve Toronto's waterfront, taking over the area from Bathurst Street to York Street along the waterfront for what they called the Harbourfront Project. With this constant advancement and the development of Toronto's waterfront, who knows what our shores will look like in decades to come? Now, as mentioned, once you sail on Kaiama, you may travel through the east gap of the harbor. If you look directly south, you will see a stretch of land called the Leslie Street Spit. This man-made peninsula is home to Tommy Thompson Park, which represents some of the largest existing natural habitat on the Toronto waterfront. The site now extends about 5 kilometers into Lake Ontario, and is home to meadows, forests, marshes, cobblestone beaches, and sand dunes. Of course, perfect for hiking, cycling, rollerblading, and fishing. Can you believe that we have this right downtown? But what makes this area truly incredible is the bird life. This area is a very popular resting spot for birds during migration, who may stop in for some rest and relaxation. Let's just say the travel industry for birds is booming in Toronto. We boast over 316 different species of birds that have been recorded at the park, with 55 of them being breeding species. They even have raptors! Not to be confused with our local basketball heroes, the Toronto Raptors, which I cannot guarantee you will spot. Toronto is truly a city like no other. We are a booming metropolis with kind people, art, poutine, sports, old world architecture, beautiful green space, and of course, our beloved waterfront. In 2015, The Economist magazine named Toronto the world's best city to live in, and we definitely agree. We here at Great Lakes Schooner Company are so proud to be a part of the rich history of this city, caring for one of Toronto's greatest treasures, the iconic tall ship Kaiama. She has lived a long journey thus far, from Germany, throughout Europe, to the Caribbean seas, all the way here, proudly withstanding many infamously cold Toronto winters. But we truly believe this is exactly where she is meant to be. You are now a part of the legacy of this historic vessel, and we are so grateful that you have taken the time to experience her journey, a moment captured in time. Kaiama is truly a legend. Thank you, and we hope to see you often. All aboard!